Hi everybody, Mark Wallon to this morning's session on the Discovering Buddhism module, How to Rely Upon a Spiritual Teacher. We'll begin as we normally do by doing a short breathing meditation. I'll set the motivation and also some prayers together. So please get comfortable in your seat. Make sure your back is straight and your shoulders are relaxed. And letting the body breathe itself. Become aware of movements that take place at the abdomen and upper chest as you inhale and exhale. And while you become aware of the movements that take place either at the abdomen or the upper chest, while you breathe normally and naturally, imagine all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas from the 10 directions of space appear above the crown of your head and around your feet. Gather all sentient beings. And you recollect that you want to put an end to their suffering and the causes of suffering, and to deliver them into highest enlightenment. And to do that, you need to do the same for yourself. And to help you do that, you're going to rely upon the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who abide above the crown of your head. And you'll do that by taking a refuge in them and generating the mind of enlightenment. So to recite the prayers together. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In stabilizing this wish and making it stronger, we can recite the four immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Here we can recite the Seven Limb Prayer, which summarizes everything we need to abandon and everything we need to adopt to become fully awakened. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. Then we make an offering to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who are present. I think here we're we're letting go of the clinging that we have to our body, our thought processes, and our merit. And in the absence of the clinging, a wonderful pure land appears, whereby we can take care of others and teach them the Dharma in future. So this ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offered. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Gurata Mandala Kamnariatayami. So they release the offering. And the offering is accepted by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas above us, and they smile at us with delight. They think that this vast field of merit begins to dissolve into light, being absorbed into the central figure of Shakyamuni Buddha. An emanation leaves his heart, moves through space, and comes to abide above the crown of your head. Emanation drops down through space, enters the crown of your head, goes down, and then stops at the level of your heart, whereby its radiance begins to fill your body and your mind. And the radiance of the light waves goes out through the pores of your skin, filling all of space. And wherever there are sentient beings within space, they are touched by that light and completely transformed and become fully awakened. No difference between ourselves and any other being. Every idea of self and other, inner and outer, in fact, all dualities have subsided. And the thought arises that we need to help others. And with that thought, all the light rays begin to withdraw from the 10 directions of space and re-enter your body at the level of the heart. And you can feel yourself breathing normally and naturally in your chair. And acknowledge that the purpose for listening to these teachings is to put them into practice, to waken yourself and help others do the same. And breathing in deeply through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth, and let your eyes flutter open, and find yourself sitting in the chair in front of your screen. And I'll begin the class now. So you can see here we're up to class 5 of this topic, the spiritual teacher. And we've covered a bit of material so far. So we began by acknowledging the need for a teacher. So we need a teacher because we do not know how to gather the two accumulations, nor how to purify the mind of the two obscurations. So we need someone to help us do that. We need to find a teacher, and what we can do, what will help us find them, is to examine the lineage of the teacher, their practice history, their compassion and willingness to help us, and their discipline. And as a student, we need to look towards spiritual teachers in terms of what we wish to learn and what we are capable of absorbing. And our teachers should have at least these 10 qualities. They have to be disciplined, serene, and thoroughly pacified, know more than us, have a wealth of scriptural knowledge, and have a thorough knowledge of reality. And skills that are particularly useful in relationship to the student are that they need to be skillful, have abandoned dispiritedness, teach out of a sense of love and concern, and be very energetic. And we ourselves have to bring some qualities also. So we need to be non-biased, intelligent, greatly diligent, attentive, and respectful. And when we rely upon the teacher, we can rely upon them using our thoughts and our actions. And last week we looked at some of the thoughts we need to bring towards relationship, and these thoughts were contained within 9 similes. These are the books I've been relying upon, and today, with this teaching, the particular practice I'll be looking at is the book I've been relying on, is called The Heart of the Path.
Can you just stop the share? Oh, hang on. Are you... Just sit in a bit closer.
Yes, I've been relying on this book here called The Heart of the Path for the explanation today. So what we're looking at today is these two topics, this topics, consider the attitudes of correct devotion and the disadvantages of incorrect devotion. Now, when this topic is usually presented within the Lamrim Chenmo, this topic comes after the topic called having devotion in that the teacher is the Buddha. But I thought I'd present it the opposite way. I've done that by looking at Lama Zopa's book in particular. The reason for that is just to sort of perhaps make you feel a bit more enthusiastic about developing the understanding first of all, and then next week we'll look at what we need to actually do to think that our teacher is an actual Buddha. So when Lama Tsongkhapa asked the deity Manjushri, how do we develop realizations quickly? And not just realizing these quickly, but how do we realize them quickly so that we can become enlightened? So when Lama Tsongkhapa asked Manjushri this, Manjushri said to him, you need to train your mind in the actual body of the graduated path to enlightenment, and we should attempt to purify our obstacles and accumulate merit. So there are two things there. And then we have to make single-pointed requests to the guru, inseparable from the deity. So this is really sort of saying we need to see the guru as being the deity, being Buddha, and then make requests to him. So making these single-pointed requests to the guru means sort of like transforming your the ordinary mind that sees the teacher as an ordinary person. And instead of seeing them as an ordinary person, seeing them as a completely enlightened person. So it's not easy to do this, and there's over time people have made many mistakes about this practice. So we're going to look at that section, and in fact His Holiness has often warned people about doing this type of practice, but we'll talk about that much more next week. But here today, we're going to really look at, you know, if you could do that, the advantages of it are tremendous. So we're going to look at the advantages today and some of the disadvantages if you make these attempts but do it wrongly. And then next week, we'll look at these this practice in more depth, the practice of seeing the Guru as a Buddha. And of course, you know, the last lesson we'll do in this module will be about the sort of different problems we face in developing an attitude of respect and faith and so forth towards the teacher. So these problems really all come up in relationship to the topic of being able to see the teacher as a fully enlightened being. Let's begin by looking at, in general, there are four benefits of guru devotion. So the first benefit is to receive blessings. So what this means is that if you can see your teacher as the Buddha himself, then your mind will definitely change. So a blessing is about a mental change for the better. So if you just, you know, think about it naturally, you know, like I'm sure there'd be a much bigger difference between your attitude to me now if I just saw, well, you know, Eddie's the tutor at Langri Tangpa Center. But then if it was sort of, no, actually Eddie's an actual Buddha. If that was sort of like known worldwide that there's this Buddha at Langri Tangpa Center, I'm sure nearly everybody would have a very different attitude towards me than what they do towards me now as an ordinary person. So that different attitude is what we call the blessing. So that takes place, and it makes you able to receive and absorb the teachings that the teacher gives, and actually put them into practice and make changes. The second great benefit is to be like you are protected from the different forms of delusion that will arise. Thirdly, that your merit is protected. So in other words, you know, the strength of your practice is protected.
And Eddie, even with the first one of the receiving blessings, it's like before anyone gives a talk at Langri Tangpa Center, it's always really nice to not just introduce them by name, but like a little bit of background, and that helps everybody become open to what they've got to say. Just on a day-to-day level, it makes all the difference. And I've noticed if we don't do that, then people are quite distracted or not dismissive, but aren't ready to actually get the most benefit that they can.
Yeah, it could be that, yeah, that sense you'd also, who's this guy? Who are they, you know?
Yeah, and then you get a little bit of context and then you go, oh, right, okay.
Yeah, that's right. So that sense of okay, that's what we'd say is the blessing.
Yep.
And lastly, this, so we are protected from having our realizations delayed. So we'll have a look at each of these in a little bit more depth now. So these are four general benefits. So if we have guru devotion, which means, you know, seeing the guru as a Buddha, then we receive the blessings of the guru. meaning the blessings of Buddha. And then those blessings then become the cause to achieve the realizations of the path to enlightenment. So it says, just as rain moistens the ground so that seeds planted in a field can grow, the rain of the Guru's blessings moistens the field of the mind so that realizations can grow. But if you have no devotion, then we have no cause to receive the blessings. And without the blessings, then we have no cause for the realizations, which means then we can't achieve enlightenment and, you know, try and accomplish the goal of life. So receiving is the, like I said, the cause to achieve realizations of the path. So I'm sure most of you would have had instances where you've been sitting in front of a teacher, a qualified teacher, and you know, you get these sort of aha moments. And so sometimes it takes place when you've been reading this material for quite a few years and you've heard it said by other people over and over. And then one day, just in front of that particular teacher, and then they say it, and suddenly it's like, oh, I get it. And I've often heard people say, oh, that was amazing what he said, and da-da-da. And I hear what they tell me, and I go, you know, he's been saying this for so many years, or we've had teachers come here all the time and we've been saying the same thing. But it's just for that moment that that particular student's mind has become receptive to it. And so that receptivity is what we call the blessing. And so, of course, it's much more likely to happen when you have teachers with the right qualities. But it also happens with those qualities. They know the Dharma, they impart it, but we ourselves are receptive. And that receptivity can be enhanced by thinking of the person, whether they are, wherever they are in terms of the path, as if they were fully awakened persons. So I remember in terms of this one time, many years ago, there was a Lama who came to Australia, and Miffy's mother, Inta, had said, you know, she wanted for me to meet him. But he wasn't coming to Queensland. We had to go down to New South Wales to meet him. Anyway, Miffy's mother and I and a couple of other students went down together. And just before we left, one of the monks at Chen Rezig Institute had actually said, you know, there's an eighth ground bodhisattva coming to Australia. And I just went, an eighth ground bodhisattva, that's incredibly highly advanced. You know, I mean, there's a couple of grounds more, of course, than your Buddha. I thought, I might never meet a Buddha, but an eighth ground bodhisattva, I've got to go and meet such a person. And, you know, so I've never seen anything like this when I went to see this person. So the people were just openly weeping. And I know myself, you know, like I had my head down because you're not meant to look at their faces, you know, with respect, you know. But I just thought, I've got to look because, you know, this is really an eighth ground bodhisattva. I've actually got to see what he looks like. And so when I looked up at him, you know, he was looking right at me. And, of course, I just broke down weeping too. I've never had anything like that happen to me before. And when we took the teachings, everything was just like, I just kept thinking, why don't they just say it like this? Why don't all these teachers just say it like this? This is so sort of simple. And of course, but that was, you know, looking at it, well, that's just the blessing. That's because your mind got opened up for a while there and you're able to actually hear it all and take it all in and agree with it. So you have to have my take on it, like, this is an eighth ground bodhisattva, so I had that idea in mind. And then, of course, the teacher was highly developed, heavy with good qualities. And then, stuff happened to me. So that's one of the great benefits of having correct devotion to a teacher. You can receive blessings. So Ruby, guys, if you want to ask any questions or anything, just ask Miffy, and then Miffy will let us know, and I'll stop the share and then do my best to answer some of them. So the second great benefit is that our own mind is protected from delusion. So if you think that you're in front of a fully awakened being, believe me, negative thoughts won't arise. It's just that, just you thinking that you're there, being convinced that you are in the company of a fully awakened being, your mind is put into a different state. So you won't have anger towards them, and you won't have heresy towards them. And these are the two greatest obstacles. So anger and heresy will often arise when the teacher tells you to do something that you don't like, which actually means your self-cherishing doesn't like, you know, which your attachment doesn't like. And so then you get a sort of mind becomes rebellious. Of course, Eddie, that won't happen if you actually think you're in the company of an enlightened being. Yes, Miffy?
Eddie, can I ask what do you mean by heresy?
The heresy here is to think that this is just an ordinary person. So that's called a negative thought. Seeing a fully awakened person as being an ordinary person. So that's one of the great, what they call, a heresy. In fact, Lama Tsongkhapa says, it's simply thinking that your guru is an ordinary person is one of the major causes for your experiences and realizations to degenerate. So I've met people who were once Buddhist practitioners, and then they stop. And they've stopped because over time they've developed really negative thoughts towards the guru. And it starts off by seeing and thinking of them as being ordinary, as not being fully awakened, it's not being a bodhisattva, it's not even being already on the path. You know, you've probably just thought of them as a really nice person, a good person.
Yeah, Eddie, I've seen this too with people. It's kind of like a pride that comes up of being quite condescending towards. Becoming quite condescending towards the guru, and a lot of it can come from doing lots of Dharma reading and getting intellectually accomplished, and then thinking that you know more than the guru, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, I remember a funny time once at the old centre where Kensa Rinpoche was giving us a teaching. And he gave his explanation, and then one of the students, who'd been coming a long time, was much older than I was and had much more experience in it. So then she raised her hand and Geshe said yes. And then so then she started saying, well, this is what His Holiness the Dalai Lama says about what you just said, and this is what Geshe Loden said about what you just said, and this is what another Lama has just been saying what you just said. So we're all just sitting there listening, and then Geshe says, yes, and what did I just say? I just was like, man, it was just crack up, you know. I just burst out laughing. What a brilliant response. So yeah, this person was sort of seeing Geshe as being beneath these other people and just sort of saying what they've always said. So just another person teaching the Dharma. So this one of the great delusions here is seeing the teacher as being an ordinary person. So, you know, in fact, when we first begin studying and coming to teachings, there's a way to protect the mind from this, but I'm sure most people would have forgotten it. It just seems so simple, but I think most people just take it in as information and then they don't actually do it. You know, sort of just like you said before, Miffy, the sense of arrogance, yeah, I know that, but the student doesn't actually do it. And that is that sort of thing where you go, you know, I'm coming along to this teaching because I'm actually sick. And when I come here, this teaching will be medicine for me. And this teacher is the doctor himself, the Buddha, giving me this medicine. But that's how we're meant to go and take teachings, just straight away, as the get-go to walk in. And not only that, but in the monastery of Nalanda, when teachings were given to the ordained, and this, you know, so this is not just for ordained, of course, we should think, you know, we are also students, so we need to do the same. Is that when you walk in, like to the center or the monastery, you walk into the mandala of the Buddha, of the Guru. So you walk in, the ground is like this really, you know, like soft, supple, and blue colored, and so forth. And when you sit down, you are an actual bodhisattva. And the person giving you the teachings is the actual Buddha himself. Right? So, you know, straight away, that would stop negative thoughts arising, doesn't it? You can't see the, you know, you see the teacher as being an ordinary person. So this is also in this way of, you know, stopping ordinary appearances, stop in the sense that this is just an ordinary person, these are just ordinary things I'm listening to. Because the ordinariness really helps the delusions to grow. So if we can have this, you know, develop this devotion that sees the teacher as being the Buddha, we actually protect our minds from delusion. So the third benefit is having devotion that sees the Guru as a Buddha will protect your merit. How does it do that? Well, it stops the arising of negative thoughts towards the Guru. It's said in the text that having negative thoughts towards the Guru, especially anger and resentment, destroys like eons of positivity, eons of merit. So we need, so merit, so you know, merit is just another way really of talking about virtue. And it's virtue that actually protects the mind. So if we have Guru devotion, we also protect our merit. So in brief, these, you know, these extremely positive thoughts towards the Guru support our own virtue. And the fourth benefit is this protection. The Guru devotion protects us from the delay of realizations. This is when we generate anger or heresy for even a moment, we postpone realizations of the path to enlightenment for a very long time. And this is the sort of damage we cause to our own mental continuum if we are to generate anger or heresy. So that's the four general benefits of developing the sense of faith in the guru as being a Buddha. So next week we'll actually look at how we can actually develop that type of faith, the reasoning for it, and the advantages for doing so. Here we're looking at like if we could have had already done it, if we've already committed ourselves to the teacher, so we've got an actual disciple-teacher relationship, and we can actually see the teacher as being the Buddha, there are great advantages for doing so. And here are two more. First of all, we become closer to enlightenment. And we become closer to enlightenment by first practicing the advice and making offerings and serving the teacher. So every time we follow the guru's advice, which includes living in vows, doing dharma practices, serving others, then you become closer to enlightenment. So Lama Zopa says this very nice thing. He says, every time we do what we've been told to do, we become closer to enlightenment. In our daily life, we become closer. Each time we're able to carry out a piece of advice given to us by our virtuous friend. Each time you can practice the teachings, you get closer to enlightenment. This is, if you're aware of this benefit, you will see that you are gaining an inconceivable merit all the time and every time you follow the guru's advice. Then your life becomes extremely enjoyable. So I think this is, we need to remember this, especially, you know, like there's things we've got to do every day, like making offerings. We're meant to be serving sentient beings. We've got to remind ourselves that we're getting closer to enlightenment. Otherwise, over time, our practice won't be an ornament, it'll be a burden. You know, you don't want that. You don't want this idea of, oh, I've got to do these practices now. I've got to do this and that. You know, it's like a sort of a, there's no joy there. So we don't want the mind to be tainted like that. So one of the great advantages of having a good devotion to the teacher is to, of course, move closer to enlightenment. And that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? So I get closer to the state of Buddhahood. This is the next event. Great thing is that you please all the Buddhas. So I'll put this picture up here because when I look at the commentary on it, it seems suitable. So it says there's a book called The Essence of Nectar, which Lama Zopa Rinpoche is often recommending, and he highly regards it. He says, when a disciple correctly follows the holy virtuous friend, the thought that this practitioner will quickly be liberated from samsara profoundly pleases the holy minds of all the victorious ones, like a mother who sees that her son has been benefited. So again, Lama Zopa says, now just as a mother is very happy when she sees someone helping her beloved child, all the Buddhas are pleased when we devote ourselves correctly to the virtuous friend with thought and action, following their advice and serving them. He goes on to say later on, now if we make an offering to the Buddhas of the three times, we gain the benefit of having made that offering. But we can't be sure that the Buddhas actually accept our offering with pleased holy minds. However, by making an offering to the Guru, we receive both the benefit of having made an offering to all the Buddhas and of having the offering accepted. In this way, we're quickly able to finish the work of accumulating merit. So some of you who have been doing the Guru Puja, you know, in that practice, you know that the Guru's body is the abode of all the Buddhas. But it's like the Pure Land itself. The limbs, the eyes, every part of the body is a Buddha and a Buddha field. And so by making, you know, this, or visualizing the Buddha, the Guru in that way, the merit is tremendous. So the Guru becomes the supreme field of merit. Like I was saying before, just think about this, of how your mind is. An ordinary worldly example. You know, suppose we know somebody, we've grown up with them, you know, so they're an ordinary person, just like us. But then they go off somewhere, they disappear for quite a few years, and in that time they become, you know, really famous in their field. They're held in high esteem by all the people in that field and sort of many other people too. And then they come back and everybody's that knew them before is not relating to them as the person they were before, but as somebody quite special. But they have a very different attitude towards them. They have a lot of respect for them. So when the person comes back, of course, then we behave very differently towards them, don't we? We actually see them quite differently. Now, this happens especially in terms of the field of the cinema and the arts. Like in Australia, we've had a number of different artists who have gone off to America and to Hollywood and have become, you know, like world famous Hollywood stars. So they're treated very differently when they come back to Australia, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a similar type of thing here. You start off with, oh, once this person was an ordinary person, but now they're not. Now they're fully awakened. Now they are the Buddha himself. And so your behavior changes towards them, your attitude changes towards them. And so, of course, when it does, you know, the person that really benefits is us. It doesn't make a great deal of difference to the person that you're praising or think really well of. What you'll see is how your own mind changes. You know, like I said, in terms of respect, in terms of kindness, and so forth. So they were not harmed by evil friends. So he says, if we correctly devote ourselves to our virtuous friend with our thought and action and allow ourselves to be under the control of them, then we're not going to be harmed by what are called maras or evil friends. Because of our strong devotion, you know, we also purify inconceivable obscurations and past negative karma and accumulate extensive merit. And since so non-human beings like devas and spirits can't disturb your practice, and even human beings can't harm us. So some of you might have come across the term maras before, in particular four different types of maras. So mara is just an obstacle to your happiness. It obstructs happiness. And you can have inner and outer maras. So the inner maras are karma and delusion. And the outer maras are like worldly beings, ordinary people, could be ordinary people or spirit type beings. And they will actually find themselves unable to harm you if you have this devotion to the Guru that sees them as a Buddha. So once again, to me, this seems to make easy sense also, especially in terms of where, if I look at myself, for instance, you know, so I've got quite a checkered history. And if some of those persons from my past were to find out where I was now and were to come over and see me, and they were still doing the same things they were doing, there's no way they could convince me to join them and do the same things again. And that's just because I have faith in the Dharma and my teachers. I go, you know, I can't go and do those sort of things that I used to do, thinking that I'd be happier and better off by doing them. So we can't be harmed by following our stupid friends.
Eddie, also, I think in terms of like the internal Maras, we have, a lot of Westerners are very down on themselves, have really negative self-talk and, low self-esteem, totally underestimate our own worth. And so if we actually had guru devotion, you know, the guru would never think of us like that. So we're kind of freed from all of that real negative view of ourselves as well.
Yeah, and the guru would have taught us human rebirth.
Precious and Buddha nature and, you know, has
virtue, all these sort of things, you know. Yeah, so the Maras here are just, as you've pointed out, Miffy, just these really negative mental states. And if you have very negative mental states, you which are the inner Maras, you open yourself to the harm of the outer Maras.
Yeah. And Eddie, often this is the first kind of relief that we get from those inner Maras is when we do come and take teachings from, you know, a great teacher, and they relate to us in this entirely new way of recognizing our qualities and virtue and Buddha nature, and it can often be the first time that anybody has, and that's why we become so moved.
Yeah, that's right. They sort of accept us unconditionally. Yeah? They understand that the disturbing emotions are transitory. They will come and go. But the deepest nature, the Buddha nature, that doesn't come and go. Yeah. So they sort of recognize at that level, you know, as actually being good. Now, I think, you know, in Christianity, it's a bit like that too. You know, like we're created, God creates us. But then there's such an emphasis put on sin, we sort of think, you know, like we're bad from the beginning. And, you know, the Buddha Dharma shows us that our problems and our sufferings are all arising from just mistaken ideas, wrong ideas about ourselves and the world. And if we don't have those ideas or stop cultivating them, we will not experience the suffering that we normally do. And the lovely thing, as you're pointing out, Miffy, is that, you know, the teachers acknowledge that potential that we have in ourselves. So if we have this devotion or faith towards the teacher, then the blessings can take place. The other thing here too with this, it might be that while you're hearing me talk about this, you're all thinking that the teacher is the external person, the external human being. But as you'll see, guru devotions are not as simple as that. It's like, you know, as we were saying, this the guru appears as the ordinary person. That's the only way we could ever relate to Buddhas. But actually, he is, as well as appearing as the ordinary Buddha, is also like the mind essence of the Buddha, the Dharmakaya. Now, we also have this potential of Dharmakaya within us. We also have, you know, the ability to be fully awakened. And so wherever we are, the mind of the Buddha knows us. And, you know, so there's this relationship here between our mind, the Buddha nature that we have, and the Buddha himself, the fully awakened mind. So it's a sort of thing of us being able to recognize our own potential, but this really great, great potential. And we need to awaken the Buddha nature and become, have the actual Dharmakaya of the Buddha.
The way that you're describing this, Eddie, puts me in mind of, when we first fall in love, and it's that, whoever we're falling in love with, it's often because they've recognized all these qualities in us that we have not recognized. And so, then in a way, when we fall in love, we have incredible devotion to the loved one because of that, because they bring out our, best qualities and make us aware of those.
Yeah, that's right. Because often we think, don't we? We think they love me. We must be thinking that, don't we? Well, we love them. it's like, this is the sort of thing of going, you've pointed out before too, if you're about, when people do the deity practices, like Tara and so forth. It's really what the guru is doing, is pointing you back at what's already lovable about yourself. But for us, we have to sort of go outwards before we can come back inwards. We see, we love the other because they love us.
Yeah, it's kind of like we need to have that taste of it first from somebody else, whether, it's on that kind of really kind of, biological, secular level where that is the natural process. But of course, who we have devotion to, if it's to another fallible human being like us, it's bound to failure. But the whole process of becoming open, having your qualities recognized, and then actually being able to receive the blessings, because for a while you are actually, happy and acting much better and all of those things. So it's actually taking that natural process.
If you think about it, if you were to say to the other person, so why do you love me? And they were to tell you about all the good qualities that they were attracted to. And then you look around and look at your own attractive qualities and thought, oh, wow, yeah, they're tremendous. That you could actually appreciate them. Those all good qualities are called guru. Remember guru? Heavy with good qualities. That's what the word means. The good qualities, heavy good qualities.
Mm. Eddie, just stop the screen share for a moment. There's a couple of questions. So Anthea has a question.
Sure, Anthea.
Have the great teachers, the gurus, reached enlightenment? Is that why it was such a strong experience for you when you met that guru, that teacher that you're talking about?
That's not necessarily the case, Anthea. It doesn't have to be the case. So that's what we'll see. It doesn't require that the person you think of as a Buddha is a Buddha. So that whether they are or not, it's not really necessary. What was that film we saw many years ago, Miffy, that great one, where that guy was a fraud?
I will try and find the name of it. It's in our library. It was an experiment that this fellow did for setting himself up as a guru. And of course, lots of people did have devotion towards him. And throughout the movie, the ones that had real devotion actually really progressed in their own development as human beings.
One of the things that, I should, the real purpose behind this is not that the person is a Buddha. But the purpose for seeing the teacher as a Buddha is that is for you to Lama's up and say profit by it. You're just a profit by it. That's so it's about your own perspective. It's developing your own, it's changing that. It's making you engage in the training.
Yeah, so Daryl said it's the Kumare is the video that we're talking about, and it is a mind-boggling, quite confronting, and just really actually quite inspiring as a video, and it's really, really well-made movie. Also, there's a question from Demi that sometimes we intellectually know we have Buddha nature and, you know, nature of the Dharmakaya, but delusions and old habits erode this. So Demi's asking, like, what's a good way to remember this? And I'm thinking, well, you know, the guru devotion, is this one of the first things that we do to be able to erode that negative view of our of ourselves or our, you know, lack of...
No, it's not the first thing. One of the things, Demi, is to think of what Buddha nature actually is. You know, so... the Buddha nature is the mind that is already obscured, right? So we know we have a mind that is obscured. But so that's the mind that's obscured and has the potentials for those obscurations to be removed. That's Buddha nature. When all those obscurations are removed, what's called Buddha nature is now becomes called Dharmakaya, nature body. And so I always remember this. It's like, yeah, the present mind that you have, which is obscured, is it has the nature of a Buddha. All that has to be done is the obscurations have to be removed. So it's not like we've got to get a whole lot of things. Actually, we have to remove some stuff. And well, the removal we have to do is remove ignorance and the afflictions that arise from it. And then we have what was already there. You know, that nature, the nature to be the Buddha nature. Well, it's not Buddha nature then. It's different. and as for your question, Miffy, about... what was the second one you asked me for? Was about relying upon guru devotion first. Was that the first
one? Well, just that I'm thinking that with guru devotion, often that is the first time that we have an experience of our Buddha nature or our potential.
No.
That's okay.
No, we don't need that can happen quite naturally, actually. But then you want a teacher to actually show you how to do it consistently and sort of abide in it and get back to it. So many times my person can discover it, but then it's like, you know, and it's like, wow. But then it's like, how did that happen?
Mm.
How can I abide in it?
Yeah, well, that seems to be the next thing that we have to do, because I just think back to all those years with Lama Yeshe teaching and how people so enjoyed his teaching, so relished being in his company, and yet there was a great dependence of just I feel good when I'm with the Lama, and then the rest of the time I feel terrible, and then when Lama passed away, then all of these people were bereft.
Yeah, that's right. And just Rebecca, yeah, that's dead right. Yeah, so like I think Lama actually came from that perspective, eh? You know, and so it was like incredibly invigorating and wonderful to be in his company. This whole sort of thing of actually recognizing what was already present and coming from that perspective. So people loved that, of course. But they just sort of, like, you know, didn't do it for themselves. And so that's what, you know, this is what the idea of the teacher is, isn't it? To help us do it for ourselves. Actually, it was the last words of the Buddha before he died. He sort of said, you are your own refuge. You'll have to do this yourself. Oopsie. We're going to go back to this. Now, what's going on?
Screen share.
Yep. There we go. So, once again, quite a natural event takes place. Delusions and negativities naturally cease. If you correctly devote yourself to a teacher, all your delusions, and they will naturally cease. How? Why? You will realize the advantages of devoting yourself to the virtuous friend who points out to you that your unsubdued mind and your wrong conduct is the actual enemy. That's what's got to be overcome. So you know what to practice and what to abandon. And then you give up the wrong conduct. So teachers, you know, like, we need somebody for external to us, explaining the material to us. Then we have to sort of reflect on it and put it into practice to see, is it true what he's saying? You find it is. And then you have much more faith in your teacher. So, you know, we understand what's to be abandoned and what's to be adopted. It's a natural outcome too. All realizations of the paths increase. So in this life, as you find, you do become happier. And, you know, what we want to do is to, one of the great things of having guru devotion is at the time of death, if you could just place your mind on an image of your teacher and die like that, you'd be fine. This is another great advantage, of course. Never lacking a teacher in future lives. If you put the cause and conditions into place to develop a really good and authentic, strong relationship with a teacher now, that becomes a cause for it to happen again. So any of you just looking back over your life to what it was like before you met a teacher, before you became a Buddhist, compare the past life to the life you're living at present. There will probably be some major differences. If you can acknowledge that there are major differences and it's made a major difference to your life, you've got to sort of, like, keep developing it. Keep developing this respect and appreciation for the changes that have come about because you've met this teacher. And come the time of death, you know, remember, you know, just that life doesn't just stop because you die. There's going to be other lives. You will want to meet a teacher like that again, if not that same teacher. So I'll tell you a little story now. So it used to be
a screen share, huh?
Okay, thank you. So there used to be a student coming here, and she'd been brought up as a Christian, was teaching in Catholic schools, and had a dream. And in the dream, a monk appeared to her and told her that she had to go to, she had to find the Buddhist path to learn about death and dying so that he could teach the Christians. She actually ended up at our center. And so for quite a number of years, so she was a Christian, but she would try and learn as much as she could about Buddhism. And then one day, we were told that there was a great teacher coming out to Brisbane. And this woman had a really nice big house, a very nice big clean house. And so he needed a place for the teacher to stay. So I suggested, I told Miffy about this, and Miffy asked this woman, would she be prepared to look after this teacher while he was here? And so she said, yeah, sure. So she put him up. The first teachings that he gave, she took refuge, became a Buddhist, took an initiation, and then he became a heart guru. Then later on, when she'd have her difficulties, I said to just talk to him about them, tell him. And she used to have quite amazing dreams. And anyway, her teacher told her in a previous life, you were my student then, and you are my student now. And so it was really simple. Also, this guy, okay, when you come to die, remember you want to keep that student-teacher connection up. So she had immense devotion towards her teacher.
So, Eddie, in a way, we can backtrack and think, well, if we have a connection with Lungri Tungpa Center, we are picking up where we left off with our connection with Rinpoche, with Lama Zopa Rinpoche. You know, it's Lama Zopa Rinpoche's center, and if we have any benefit from Lungri Tungpa Center, it's because of our connection with Lama Zopa Rinpoche already, even if we've never yet met him in this life.
Yes, that being the case, it might be a very good idea. Whenever you can, try and get a chance to meet him, because, you never know what can happen. And like meeting the guru is like meeting the Buddha. So, strange things happen. Like I said before, I'd never ever think that just by seeing somebody that I've never met in my life, I could just end up sobbing and have a complete heart opening. And yet, that's exactly what happened. And same to our friend, the student who's here. She met this teacher, and it was just the opening took place. The blessing took place. Then you find, actually, I've had these connections before. As Miffy's pointed out, so this could be highly likely that we have come into contact with the Buddha Dharma in previous lives, and those have acted as conditions and causes for us to meet it again. Now what we need to do is meet the actual teacher. So whenever they come out, it's always a good idea to offer a karta at least, make some sort of connection. Actually, I remember reading a story where one of the teachers said to a student, I want you to go and take this particular teaching from this other lama. And the student said, but you know that teaching. And you're my heart teacher. Why don't you give me the teaching? And then the teacher said to him, you've had a connection with this teacher in the past, and I want you to reconnect. So I want you to go and take the teacher from that person. So when we're doing this practice, we've already examined the teacher beforehand. We've looked at that they have actually good qualities. It's not just anybody we're doing this to. We've examined the teacher first, we've examined ourselves. We've decided, I want to have a student-teacher relationship. When I do, what will be of tremendous benefit for me is if I could see them as if they were the actual Buddha themselves. And if I can't do that immediately, there are still other steps I could go. I could look at them actually as a bodhisattva. I could look at them actually as a representative of the Buddha, and still blessings would take place. So some time ago you might have seen His Holiness the Dalai Lama gave the bodhisattva vows on Zoom. So he did not say there, everyone has to see me as a Buddha. And then I give you, then the Buddha, which is him, gives you the bodhisattva vow. He backtracked like two steps. And this is sort of like all the people who first come into the Buddha Dharma could go, yep, I can do that. I can take the His Holiness as the representative of the Buddha. He represents the Buddha, and he, as a representative, he's giving the vow. He's offering the vow. Other people, of course, not newcomers, they would see the Dalai Lama as, no, this is Chen Rezig himself doing the vow. So there are different stages we can actually go through to actually train the mind and to build it up, to have enough strength to actually see the teacher as being the Buddha himself. Otherwise, we can see, like I said, as a bodhisattva that has all the good qualities, or as a person, you know, the representative of the Buddha. But either way, is like it's much more beneficial for us to look at them as like that than to just think of them as being an ordinary human being giving teachings. Okay, I'll continue on. And if we can, like I said, if we can do this, we put into place the cause and conditions to have another teacher in future lives. So we're not going to fall into the lower realms, right? So our karma is quickly purified if we can find a reliable teacher and rely upon them as being the Buddha themselves. We'll always accomplish effortlessly all of our wishes. This is when you practice according to the guru's advice. So just briefly, you know, so I've had different times in my life when I've needed to take advice from Kensa Rinpoche. And so then I'll go and ask him, you know, I've got these choices to make, I don't know what to do. So then I ask him what to do, and then I do it. And it's the same with Miffy. Miffy's had different times in her life where she's either had to ask Kensa Rinpoche or Lama Zopa Rinpoche for advice. You know, so when the advice comes, if you find you really can't do it, then you just got to explain that you can't do that advice. Is there anything else? But other times, if it's doable, then you should do it.
Yeah, so Eddie, we were just talking the other night, and it's several years ago when I really, really, really wanted to go overseas, but I, you know, I wasn't sure if it was going to be the right time in terms of Lungri Tungpa Center, and so I asked Kensa Rinpoche, and so he did, you know, he checked up and then said, no, it's not a good time to go overseas. And so one of his attendants said, so what are you going to do, Miffy? And I was like, well, of course I'm not going, even though I really, really wanted to. It was an absolute no-brainer, don't go. And as it turned out, what happened was that this Lungri Tungpa Center building, that's the time where it came up, the opportunity for us to purchase it, to move to a bigger, better Lungri Tungpa Center. So, you know, if I had been overseas then, we would have missed that opportunity.
So you find, you know, when you haven't taken the teacher on as your mentor, as your guru, you can ask for advice, and what you normally get is general advice. But if the teacher knows that you've actually taken them as a guru, and they know that, you know, they are your teacher, you know, like we've been in places where, like Lama Zopa won't just go and do this and do that. It's like you just watch him. He just goes into this different sort of state. He often does a mo of some sort, and just like Kensa Rinpoche. It's not just like me sitting there going, oh, have you tried this? What about this? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's not like that. So it's like they really tap into the merit field, you know, the enlightened state, and then the outcomes, the advice. So when I saw that, it's just like, okay, this is just not somebody suggesting something. This advice is coming from a much deeper level. And
yeah, this is someone with inside knowledge.
Yeah, inside knowledge. I'm going to do that. I asked for the advice. I don't know. For me to think, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. It's like saying, well, I know that. I'm not going to do that.
Which there is a danger, Eddie, if you kind of if you're dominated by those worldly concerns of just wanting to get the green light to do what you want to do, then there is a danger of guru shopping and going around to all the different teachers until you get the answer that you want, then going with that one.
which has also happened before, isn't it? Yeah, so this is it. You accomplish your wishes. So now I'm going to race through these next things that happen when you, if you don't rely upon them properly, right? I'm going to race through because I've only got about 10 minutes left. So these are the faults. If you've actually, remember here, you've taken on the teacher as a guru, but you start criticizing them. If you do that, you criticize all the Buddhas. When that happens, this is what happens. You know? You're rejecting happiness and embracing suffering instead. So each moment of anger or resentment towards the teacher results in that many moments of living a life in hell, in another rebirth. So yeah, moments of anger lead to rebirth in the hells. Angry thoughts about him or her destroy your root merit. Because the root of your merit is in the teacher. Right? And once again, it's like not just external teacher, but internal teacher. So your anger destroys what you presently, your virtue. Now, we are within the Mahayana tradition. Part of that tradition is the practice of Tantra. So somewhere along the line, you'll get introduced to tantric practices. Nevertheless, if you practice tantra but you don't have guru devotion, all success eludes you. Whatever the great things were that could have evolved, just don't evolve. And then, of course, problems that come up, that arise through the practice of Tantra, but without actually devotion in the teacher, and seeing the teacher as the Buddha, as Dharmakaya itself, it's just problematic, really problematic. So once again, we're fortunate enough that this has happened very rarely in our within the umbrella of the FPMT, but it's happened outside our system. Lamas have carried out certain types of behaviors that the students have found very problematic, and then they've ended up despising the teachers. So it is a fact that some teachers do things that are not Dharma. But it doesn't mean to say you've got to become angry with them and despise them. That doesn't follow. But you can still separate yourself from them, but anger and, like I said, having a sense of just thinking of them as being despicable and all the negative stuff that can arise in your mind, it's not necessary. This is also a very simple one, No fresh knowledge and whatever realizations you have got degenerate. So very quickly you forget what you've learned. And as you know, then you don't gather new knowledge. You don't find new ways of working with your mind. And what you do know, you just go back into the eight worldly concerns again. So what you understand of impermanence fades away. Your understanding of what causes suffering falls away. You start looking back outside yourself for the causes of suffering. A lot of bad things happen. So this also takes place. So What I would suggest you do, if you want to get more background on this and more depth, so the most in-depth book I've read on this material is a book by Lama Zopa Rinpoche called Seeing the Guru as Buddha, The Heart of the Path. So that's where it's really in depth and explained. But I suggest that before you go into that, have a look at, go online and have a look at Alexander Berzin's site, how to relate to the teacher. Then come back to this and get the really in-depth stuff. Lama Zopa Rinpoche was terrific, and his book is all the different stories that illustrate the problems that arise with incorrect or wrong guru devotion.
Eddie, can you just read that previous slide out, please, for the benefit of the recording?
Contempt towards the guru produces everything unwanted, so we experience in this life much suffering.
So, Eddie, is that like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, that if something does go wrong and then we throw out everything, then we cut ourselves off from all of that?
Yeah, you could say that. That's quite right. Now, oftentimes when people, when something happens with some sort of behavior, happens with the teacher, and then you strongly disagree with it, and this contempt arises towards them. What often happens is that not only do you throw out the teacher, but you throw out all the teachings that they taught. Right, so you stop being an actual practitioner of Dharma.
And also generate incredible negative minds.
Yeah, that's right. And so, of course, you know, that's a great source of illness. You know, you could become very depressed, for instance. So anger, depression, resentment, all those negative minds, they definitely have an impact on your ordinary health. Accidents take place. Yeah, it's no good. So in future lives, we wander endlessly. What that means, of course, you know, like I look at my own life and think, you know, before I met the Dharma and the teacher, you know, I sort of relate to myself as the hungry ghost. Like, I'd come across that term before, and I thought, that's what I am, a hungry ghost. Never, you know, wandering, never, ever content with anything, being unable to find contentment. And then, you know, the first time I heard Kinsa Rinpoche teach, it was this light bulb moment. Right, that's the end. So now it's just, you know, like making sure that I don't end up in hell in my rebirth, or a lower realm rebirth, practice properly at the time of death. But it's like saying, if you don't have a teacher, if you're not introduced to the material that stops the wandering, you will wander up and down. Yeah, endless rebirths in the lower realms. And then in the future, we lack virtuous friends. So it's like, you know, anybody's, you know, like we see this all the time happening in love affairs, don't we? We find that, you know, we fall in love with somebody, our heart gets broken, and we decide, oh, I'm never going to do that again. But so, you know, all the goodness that took place is forgotten. Only the bad stuff is remembered, so I'm not going to do that again. So it's the same thing that happens with great teachers. You know, something happens, you throw out the teacher, and you go, it's like all teachers could be like this. I'm not trusting these Dharma teachers again. You might find this, even in this life, if anybody, you know, has had a harsh upbringing, perhaps been abused by authority figures, then you come across the Buddha Dharma and they say, oh, this thing about guru devotion, he goes, no, like, you know, I've been done in by so-called teachers. This is what they do. They abuse you. So I'm not going to have that happen to me again.
Yeah, and then that happens many times. People from traumatized kind of upbringing like that, then it cuts them off from all of that goodness and potential.
Yeah. So anyway, we've come to the end, folks. It's like, lastly, one of the worst things, of course, you lose an opportunity to practice Dharma. And Dharma, protects the mind. It protects us from suffering. So just reading books won't do it. Just hearing teachings, it's not deep enough. You've actually got to sort of commit yourself to the teacher and the teachings.
Is that because, it's the relationship, the relationship that we change? It's not just through reading information.
Yeah. It's like, if you look in the worldly thing, isn't it? Yeah, you might start off reading romance books, but unless you actually have a romance, nothing else. The same here. It's like, just reading Dharma books or listening to teachings, it doesn't pull you into the depth of realization and experience. You're just always up on the surface. So somewhere along the line, we need to commit ourselves to an authentic teacher. So in summary, we've looked at some of these attitudes of the correct devotion and the advantages of having a proper reliance. And then we've looked at these last, there's these eight faults of incorrect devotion. So online there are some resources. Read the six faults of a negative attitude, the eight faults of wrong reliance, and the eight disadvantages of not finding a guru. And in terms of something to reflect upon and memorize, just try and find four advantages of correct devotion that really resonate with you. And then find four of the faults that would arise from an incorrect relationship with the teacher. One of them, I just thought, your delusions increase. They never diminish. So you can find them and just take the ones that really resonate with you now and just go, okay, I can hold on to these. They make sense to me. Mm-hmm. And then, then gradually open up some of these books, have a look at the material and think about it. And if it doesn't resonate with you, just accept that for now. Don't throw everything out. Just say, I just don't understand this at present. And next week we're going to look at, how do we actually go about seeing the teacher as the Buddha? How do we train in that sort of faith, that sort of conviction?
I just stopped the screen share, hon. And Eddie, I just wanted to say just a last thing just before we finish, that I've been thinking back to the last retreat in Bendigo with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, and during the retreat, I took lots of notes and, not quite kept a journal, but something like that, and we had lots of amazing conversations. And at the time I kind of didn't realise, it was only way afterwards, that actually all of that was inspired by Rinpoche, and that a whole lot of aha moments and realizations can come really easily when you're there and do a little bit of preparation. And then what kind of at the time seems normal, now I look back and think everything that I wrote down, all of the courses that we developed after that directly came from Rinpoche's inspiration. And the realizations, the actual progress in the Dharma, was easy. just flowed.
It's just the process of becoming devoted. So we'll have a look at that next week anyway. So I'll dedicate the merit to the happiness of all sentient beings. May they be free from suffering, and may all their suffering ripen upon us. Never separated from the happiness free of suffering, may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, the equality of all things. So the equality of all things is that all things are empty of intrinsic nature and exist in mere name. That being the case, may our enlightenment come quickly to bring about the benefit of others. Thank you, everybody. And see you next week.